today on Rocking the Suburbs.
There should be more songs about goalkeepers. They deserve one song.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Lanahan, I want to welcome you to today's episode. With me today is not Jim, but a voice that I think you'll recognize from past enterprises here on Rockin' the Suburbs. It's Nick Scalera. Nick, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. It's great to be back. It's been a while, and we are recording this on a very difficult day. And why is that day difficult, Patrick?
This is the first day since the start of the World Cup there have been no matches.
I'm just lost. I'm kind of lost. I'm walking in a haze and a funk, but luckily we have some related content that we're going to pull out today.
Yes. We're going to tie a little some music threads together with the World Cup. If you're listening to this on the day it's released, this will be the day of the first quarterfinal matches. So we're down to 8 teams. We started out with 48, Nick, and we've eliminated 40 of them. How has the World Cup been for you overall?
It has very much surpassed my expectations, which were extremely low. We all know the pre-tournament controversies, which luckily, for the most part, until very recently, they faded when the football starts, which I should have known, because it's been this way historically. It's not like there haven't been World Cups that have been ruined by dictators and politicians and other things. But once the football gets kicked, it's been a fantastic tournament. The larger format with 48 teams has been, that I was also kind of, complaining about that, but it's been fantastic. It's introduced us to so many great teams who've competed really well that we never would have seen before. And so that has been great. And obviously the coming together of the fans, in the U.S., which wasn't seen as a hospitable venue necessarily, but the people had their say in that. The Scottish fans came and drank out Boston. And it's been wild. It's been really fun. The football has been generally really good. There's plenty of scoring, plenty of controversies, as always, mostly on-field controversies, thankfully. A lot of compelling matchups. And one of the best things about the World Cup is always getting introduced to people that you never would have heard about, and that's been one of the highlights. And and if you're an old school aficionado, like, I don't know whether you consider this good or bad, but all the top teams are, except for Brazil, which we'll talk about, are kind of still in it. So we went from 48 teams to 16, and there's a lot of high-powered squads in there. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fantastic final eight.
Totally agree. I think that's a great summary. And, as you were speaking, I was just running through sort of the teams in my mind really quick. And I think, Tunisia showed up without being ready. I think they were kind of the only team that was just completely over their head at this tournament. But like you said, other than that, almost everybody has put in a very competitive performance. So it's been very entertaining. I'm right there with you. I agree. And all the possibilities of bad things happening off the field haven't happened yet. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that it remains that way.
One huge exception.
That's right.
But other than that, it's been a great tournament. The football has been exciting. you know, I just, and the other thing, there's so many more games. Like, I know you and I, Patrick, when it first started, I mean, there's like 6 games a day. And I found a way to squeeze pretty much all 6 of those in while working and otherwise, because it was worth it for the most part. I mean, I didn't see every game. That would be pretty insane. If there's someone out there that watched all the hours of every match, you know, kudos to you. But it's also, today is very hard to have 0 games. It was tough yesterday just to have 2.
It was. I know. We're going to be down to 1.
You know,
I know that Nick shared with our group text thread a picture of his new work from home setup, which had a TV placed very prominently right above his laptop.
Yeah, I was hoping that you know, in a Zoom call, someone wouldn't see the reflection of soccer in my glasses. Luckily, that didn't happen. I mean, I know at one point I was in a call and my eyes were just darting to, so I had a screen behind a screen and I keep looking up and I'm seeing myself. I'm like, this doesn't look right. I got to stop doing this. So anyway,
just blame it. I forgot to take my medication today.
Right,
sorry.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's the football on the field. Now we're going to talk a little bit about music that's tied into it and, you know, sort of go through this. And Nick, you've put together a wonderful little outline. So why don't you take it away and we'll dig into it.
Sure. So what, you know, we were, Patrick and I were chatting about the music of the World Cup, which has been a story. It's always a story. And so what I did is I picked out a few songs that we'll kind of focus on. And I know Patrick has some, and then there's a couple extras we'll add at the end so you can put together your World Cup playlist. But, you know, there are also general soccer songs that aren't specific, or football songs that aren't specific to the World Cup. And there has been some really good ones. Some you might have heard, some not. But it's been a big part of the experience at the stadiums is hearing some of these songs. There's been some interesting choices, and football music is, it runs the gamut. There are some very bad songs that are just great crowd chants. There are songs that you can't stand hearing anymore. Hello, Seven Nation Army. Still a good song. But, and then there are ones that, like, why this one? And we'll get into that to the extent that we can in this. Hopefully it won't keep you too long. I do, for those longtime listeners know, I have a rep of talking on. So I'll try to fly through this stuff because, although you got nothing else to do, well, you will tomorrow. You know, if this comes out tomorrow,
that's,
I don't
right.
want to interrupt your viewing. So we'll try to keep it to a reasonable time limit.
That sounds great. So do you want to start with Brazil?
Yeah, so goodbye, Brazil. Sorry to see you go. Any tournament without Brazil for the longtime football fan is kind of tough because you see those yellow shirts and you see Pelé and Socrates and Jairzinho, and that's what I see. Well, that's not what we saw on the field. Not what we saw.
No.
We saw a fairly poor Brazil team, and sad to see them go. They are out. But there is, as you can imagine, with the amount of football insanity in Brazil, there are some great Brazilian songs having to do with football. And I zeroed in on one particular artist who's had a long career and, as a matter of fact, has been called, one critic called this man, his name is Jorge Ben, in Brazil it'd be Jorge Ben. I'm sure that sounds terrible, because I can't do the nasally thing. He's actually has been called the poet laureate of soccer songwriting, and he's written some just amazing songs. And the one we're going to focus on is not related to the World Cup. It was recorded in 1976. The title of the song is Ponta de Lança Africano. And the translation of Ponta de Lança, this is one of my favorite Portuguese phrases for football. It's the striker, right? We call the striker this main scorer, the main forward in front. But in Brazil, the Ponta de Lança, or in Portuguese, literally means the tip of the spear or the point of the spear, which I just think is just so much more visually interesting as a word. And this song is, you know, this song is from 1976. It comes from an album called Africa Brazil, where George Ben was really trying to, you know, kind of combine African rhythms with samba, you know, and come up with, it's a fantastic album. I can't recommend it highly enough. Check out Africa Brazil. It's a little more hard rocking than his earlier samba stuff, but this song is a fabulous song. It tells a story of this African striker. He's the goal scoring man, the Omum goal, and there's a lyric that, you know, you wouldn't. Translates to the whole city emptying out just to watch him play, which I think is another fantastic image. I know Patrick and I were talking. We both discovered this off of one of David Byrne's world music compilations. I think this one was from 1989 called Beleza Tropical. I have that in my collection. I was looking at the cover and I'm like, oh yeah, I have that. I don't know where it is, but I know I have it. But anyway, some of my CDs are stored in various places. But it's a fantastic song. Why don't we take a listen to that and then talk a little bit more about George Ben, because he wrote a bunch of more songs about soccer. It's really prolific, but this one is the standout track, and I guess this is my favorite football related song ever. There's not really a contest. Let's give it a listen.
Para una domingo, para una domingo, para una domingo, para una domingo. Joga bola, joga bola,
song. And how about the chorus? I'm gonna try to babaruma. I mean,
babaruma, something like that. Yes,
I don't think that means anything. I'm not sure. I didn't find anything in my research, but man, it's a catchy song. It just gets into a groove, and once it gets in your head, you'll hear it. You'll hear it all day long.
Absolutely.
Put on the World Cup and distract yourself, because you'll just be hearing it all day long. Just a fantastic, very, very visual. Again, you don't have to understand the language to know that he's telling a story about an amazing player. And, you know, Ben, it wasn't his only song about a soccer player. He has one that he did. Yeah, he did one in 72 about a player who – he's a big Flamengo fan. So Flamengo is one of the top teams in Brazil. And he did a song about a striker named João Batista de Sales. And he got sued by that guy for using his name, but it's a really cool song called Filho Marivia. He did a song in 76, which is an ode to Zico, another famous African player, right, of the World Cups. It's on the same album as Ponta de Lança. It's called Camisa, well, 10. I'm not sure they wouldn't say it that way. He's a 10 to Gavia. And he also has songs about Pelé. He did a tribute in 2004. Basically translates to Name of the King is Pelé, King Pelé. So yeah, he's got, oh, and there's one more that we have to drop here. And I think this is a song that might be worth playing just a short clip from, because everyone's going to recognize this. This is a song called Más Que Nada. And this one was recorded by Jorge Ben in his, you know, early samba days, 1963. It's not about football at all. But if you're of a certain age like we are, you might remember, Patrick, do you remember the commercial that back in 98 that had the Brazilian squad kicking a football through a flight terminal on their way to their,
yes,
to catch a flight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's called Airport 98, and that commercial was played constantly, like before and around the World Cup. And so you see, it's got Ronaldo, Romario, Roberto Carlos, Danielson, and Ronaldo at the end, and they just like kick the ball, like people are coming with their luggage, and they like, you know, they go around them, and it's got all the just the artistry that you associate with Brazilian players. It's a fabulously produced, go look it up, go to YouTube, take a look at it. But the song became sort of associated with that World Cup. And again, it's nothing to do with it's just, I'm not sure what it's about, but it's not about football, but it really gets to the, you know, back in the day, it was samba football, right? You know, like the way Brazilian players moved, and there was I'm going to mangle this too, but there's a term called futebol art, which is literally the art of football. And that was associated certainly with Brazil in the 70s and the 80s. I guess I hate to say it, they really they either don't or aren't capable of playing that way anymore. And they right. have gone home. But plenty of good plenty of good music related to Brazilian football. So I thought we would sort of you know, mention some of those other songs. Again, you know, go to whatever your streaming service is. Look up Jorge Ben. Sometimes it's listed as Jorge Ben Jor, J-O-R at the end. Just, you know, listen to anything. Just great stuff.
Sai da minha frente, eu quero passar. Pois o samba está animado. O que eu quero é sambar. Esse samba que é misto de maracatu. É samba de preto velho, samba de preto tu. Mas que nada, um samba como esse tão legal. Você não vai querer que eu chegue no final. Oh, aria, ara, oh, oba, oba, oba. Oh, aria, ara,
I do want to point out one interesting fact. You mentioned Zico, who was a Brazilian footballer, who played was very well known. I mean, he was one of the more famous players. I believe he was a midfielder for Brazil. But there is a player in this tournament on a team that's still around, Morocco, and his full name is Mustafa Mohamed. I'm going to butcher this, Zaki Abdelrouf, and his nickname, however, is Zico. So
wow.
I believe he even has it on the back of his shirt. It's Mustafa Zico, and it's because his father was a huge fan. And when he was a kid, father just nicknamed him that, and it's really stuck. And now he's playing for the Moroccan national team. So look out for Mustafa Zico when Morocco goes up against France today.
Yes, that's going to be a hell of a match.
It is.
I really like both of those teams. I don't know.
So do I.
Root for the colonizer or the colonized. I don't know. You could take a political angle on it. Morocco is certainly the underdog. France has just an amazing set of players. I mean, they're clearly the tournament favorite. So that's going to be, man, I can't wait for that.
That'll be great.
It's going to be a long wait between now and then, but worth it. All right. Well, let's move on to something completely different.
Okay.
Couldn't be more different. So I'm not a huge fan of this particular song, but I kind of figured there is no way we could talk about World Cup music in the context of 2026 without talking about Take Me Home, Country Roads by John Denver, which has become the anthem for the U.S. soccer team, sadly eliminated by Belgium 4-1 on Monday. Deservedly so, many would say, but we won't go down that road. Somehow this song, well, there was a whole process, actually, that a lot of folks aren't aware of, where FIFA, beloved FIFA, that very just and fair organization, went to all 48 teams and asked the teams to submit songs that could be used in the stadiums, sort of when a goal is scored at the end of the game.
Right.
And so U.S. Soccer, they picked this John Denver song from 1971 as the post-win song. So we didn't hear it Monday night, but... for obvious reasons, but they had also submitted, I find these two choices, and they submitted Living on a Prayer from Bon Jovi and Sweet Caroline, which they couldn't use because England has been using Sweet Caroline, which is another weird phenomenon. Sweet Caroline, it's crossed the pond. I hear it at Arsenal games. I probably hear it at other Premier League games. If a lot of folks here will know that it kind of started with the Boston Red Sox, and it's become a thing.
Yeah.
Although Britain chose it, I don't think I've heard it. We'll talk more about other better songs that have been associated with England in this tournament. But it was a pretty phenomenal. It is pretty impressive to see a whole, 66,000 fans in Seattle just belting out Take Me Home, Country Roads, drowning out, all the sound.
All my memories gather round her. Miner's lady, stranger to blue water. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky. Misty taste of moonshine, teardrop in my eye. Country road.
It's a moment. It's an interesting unifying moment, and One of the things about soccer songs, and this applies to the songs that are associated with club teams as well, is like it doesn't have to have anything to do with anything, right? If it's right. catchy and people know the words, that it'll work, right? Think of Liverpool right. with, you know, that song that they pulled out of the Merseyside there. You'll never walk alone. You know, it's I guess it's about not being alone, which works in a crowd. But you know, there's right. there's an example of a song. Take Me Home, Country Roads, you know. Okay, fine. It's about America. The interesting thing is, it's not about West Virginia at all. And
no.
As a, you know, Patrick and I being DC area folks, it has come out, has come to be known more and more lately that it actually was written in DC by DC musicians Bill Danoff and Taffy Nevert. And they right. were in a band called Fat City. One of the worst band names I've ever heard. But anyway, I used to think in the 70s they still had bad name, you know, good bad names available, but they chose Fat City. That's fine. But they were driving down Copper Road in Montgomery County. Patrick, I don't know if you've mm-hmm. ever been on that road. I've been on it.
I have.
It's very rural. I mean, that's the thing about Montgomery County is you can drive, you know, 6-7 miles outside of D.C. and suddenly you're in a very rural scene. And that's yeah. where Danoff started singing Country Roads, you know, just kind of humming Country Roads. You know, but how did it end up West Virginia? Well, nothing rhymes with Maryland, right? It just doesn't work for a song. So
it's like rhyming with orange.
Right? Yeah. Yes. You know, and Copper Road doesn't really rhyme with anything. So, you know, so they took the poetic license. You know, they tried other states. They tried Massachusetts because Danoff was actually from Massachusetts. Neither had set foot in West Virginia at all. That's the other irony. But anyway, you know, late in 1970, they opened for John Denver at the Cellar Door. And the Cellar Door is a very famous club in Georgetown on 34th and M Street. It's not there anymore, obviously, but
right.
a lot of, you know, important early shows took place in the 60s and 70s there. They, you know, so they knew John Denver because he was part of this sort of kind of Americana proto-Americana scene around the D.C. area music. And, yep. You know, after a performance, they went down to their basement apartment for a jam session. And, you know, he heard supposedly, you know, they played this song for Denver. And he's like, golly, that's a hit. Is that a direct quote? I don't know. But that's what I've got here in my notes. Anyway, it did become a huge hit, as you know. And it actually hit number two on Billboard in August 1971. It really made John Denver a star.
Yeah.
You know, and he was an unknown before that. And, of course, you might also recognize Danoff and Nivert, who later formed Starland Vocal Band, another famous
song. Yes, sir, they did.
Of course, Afternoon Delight, a famous song. So anyway, so it's... It's weird. I'd be curious how other... There are some folks who've posted online kind of not pleased with this becoming the U.S. song because the feeling is is it country music? Should the U.S. be represented by country music? I mean, I would argue based on what we just talked about, it's not really country music per se.
No.
You know, is it
not?
Is it like somehow retrograde or, I don't know, not progressive? Probably... No, but again, it's a soccer anthem. It works. People like to sing it. And I guess the important thing is, like, everybody knows the chorus. That's what has to be.
Yes.
That's essential for a soccer song, right? You might not know every words, but if you can belt out that chorus, it'll work. So, but I don't know. It's grown on me. I don't know what your thoughts are, Patrick, about this phenomenon. It's been a big part of the tournament, at least as far as the U.S. is concerned.
It certainly has been a big part of the tournament. And it's funny for me because I learned the song growing up because my cousins had the John Denver album, and they used to play that song a lot when we were, like, the kids would be able to use the record player at the family gatherings. And I remember my cousin, who was a girl, had this John Denver. She was a big John Denver fan, really liked him and played it. However, Once I heard Toots and the Maytals version of Take Me Home Country Roads, I just wanted to obliterate John Denver's version out of my mind, because I just, Toots' vocal on that recording is just out of this world. It's so great.
Listen, I lost heaven, West Jamaica, sure is a mountain shining down the river. All my friends there, pulling on those reeds, younger than the mountain, going like a bee.
And of course, it's Take Me Home West Jamaica. So that's slightly different.
That one definitely wouldn't have worked. To FIFA. Maybe Jamaica will submit that one if they ever make the tournament.
That's right. But. And one thing I wanted to ask really quick, Nick, while you were talking, and this whole idea of if you know the chorus and it's catchy and everybody can sing and the crowd sort of takes it as their own, right? The crowd taking it is a big part of all these kind of anthems. But wasn't it the case early on with the Beatles that that's how some of this popular singing began at English matches, right? Because everybody knew the Beatles songs and they were so easy to sing along to that everybody would just start doing it and adopting them. Have you ever heard that? Is there any accuracy in that, do you think?
I haven't heard. I mean, it makes sense to me. And it also makes sense in terms of the Jerry and the Pacemakers song. And I think.
Same thing.
Right. So.
Same thing.
You know, it's mid-60s, Great Britain. Football was a working class sport. Certainly was then. It's less so now. So popular music of the day kind of makes sense for it to kind of, find its way to the terraces, as they used to call them back in the day.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense to me. I mean, the interesting thing is the only Beatles song you still hear is Hey Jude. that's heard a lot in British games, England games as well. But people got to know it. Otherwise, there are exceptions to that, and I was debating whether to bring this up. Really has nothing to do with the World Cup, but since I'm a huge Arsenal fan, they sort of manufactured their own song with this North London song, right? Angel of North London, whatever the heck it is. Where there was a local artist who'd recorded this song, and the coach heard it and was kind of like, you know what? I think this would really bring people together. So they just started playing it in the stadium. North London Forever, and it's become the anthem, but it doesn't feel as organic to me as a lot of these other things. No one knows really. I'm not sure what the story is about Liverpool, but that just feels a lot more organic to me than like suddenly this song just being played at the end of end of matches until people picked up on it, and now it's a staple. Now they play at the beginning of every game, and it's just something you got to get through if you're an Arsenal fan. Maybe you love it. If you're an opposing fan, it probably drives you nuts. I don't mind listening to You'll Never Walk Alone because it's a good song. So sure I agree on the other one. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing about these football anthems. Sometimes they're organic. Sometimes they're kind of contrived. In the end, the crowds have to adopt them as their own. And they have to sort of, wherever it came from, even if it's something as – I don't know, as bad as Sweet Caroline, if people enjoy it, and they, and 50,000 people enjoy it, it can become an anthem, It's just, that's the process.
It certainly can. And one other thing I wanted to mention that I wrote down along the lines, and you mentioned the terraces in English stadiums for many, many years until the 80s. There weren't not seats like there are now. There was just a lot of places where, people would stand and things like that. And I remember years ago I was interviewing Dave Wakeling from the English Beat, and for the old podcast, it wasn't for Rock in the Suburbs. And we got onto football as we were driving together to the interview. And he's from Birmingham, so he's an Aston Villa fan. And I asked him why they adopted this Jamaican tune by Harry J. Allstars called The Liquidator. It's an instrumental that they play when the team comes out. And he told me they played reggae and Jamaican music to keep people more docile on the terraces so they wouldn't get too amped up and, and beat each other
keep
up.
The that's violence how down. It's, I love
yes.
it.
Yes. He's like, that's how it started. And so, you know, I didn't know anything about Jamaican music, but I heard that a lot when my parents would take me to see Aston Villa. So I thought that was a really cool story.
Yeah, fact, your days on the terraces, your hooligan that's days.
Right. That's right. Man. Before the Taylor Report.
Right. Yes. The golden
anyway,
age.
Anyway, so I wanted to mention a song really quick, and it's a song that I just came across recently. When Nick and I were talking about this, and I was going to go out and see if I could find some songs that had to do with football, and I was looking around, and I came across a song called The Goalkeeper, or just Goalkeeper, I should say, and it's by one of my favorite bands, Animal Collective, who is kind of an experimental pop band, I guess would be the loose way to describe them, right, Nick?
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, out there with all kinds of different sounds that they do. And they had an EP that came out in 2017, called The Painters. It only got four songs on it. It actually has a cover of Martha and the Vandellas' Jimmy Mack, which is really worth hearing if you want to hear something. But they have this song on there called Goalkeeper, and I went to listen to it, and then I started thinking, wow, this is a really cool song. Then I went and looked up the lyrics, and it actually is a song about goalkeepers. So I think it's great, and there's a line in there about the weight of the world being on the shoulders of the goalkeeper. But I thought it would be an ideal moment before we hear a little bit of that song. And I think even for Animal Collective fans, it's probably not that well known, because I consider myself pretty well versed in their catalog, and I kind of didn't even know about this little EP that came out. There have been some incredible goalkeeping performances at this World Cup, Nick, and I wanted to highlight one, and I don't know if you have any you know, in your mind or things that have stuck out. But the guy I wanted to point to is the guy from Cape Verde called Vozinha, I think
yes.
is how you say it. Is that right?
That's
Vozinha?
Right. Yeah.
He's 40 years old and put in two of the most incredible goalkeeping performances that I've ever seen in a high-pressure situation. He kept the mighty Spain out in the first match, resulting in a 0-0 draw. And did an incredible job in that epic match against Argentina when they almost pulled it off, Cape Verde. They almost got, you know, Argentina to extra time. But, of course, we saw what happens when you get Argentina against the wall. They come back and bite you.
Yeah.
But he was just wonderful during this tournament. And his counterpart in the match against Spain in the group stage, Unai Simón, has not conceded a goal, which is pretty amazing. Through five matches, I should say, as of now, no goals conceded.
Especially when you consider he's the second best goalie in Spain.
I know.
David Raya should actually be playing, but he's not. Simón is a phenomenon as an international keeper, for sure.
Totally agree that he should. David Raya should be playing, and Simón should be the backup. But the coach of Spain is one of those traditionalists. He's very set in his lineups and his ways. Let's see. I'm just looking really quick. And the leader for saves actually is the goalkeeper from Portugal, Gil.
Diogo, yeah.
Yep, who had total of 23. He was really peppered by France in that match. It was amazing. But has anything stuck out for you as far as goalkeeping performances?
I think there's a couple. One, I mean, Vozinha sticks out because, I mean, my wife and I just got so just enthralled by the Cabo Verde story. And, you know, she's Portuguese, and so there's a relation there. you know, Vozinho, what is he, 41 years old.
40 years old, he's, yeah.
Currently, you know, someone go get him because he's out of contract. He was with a second division side in Portugal. And if he,
correct.
Which, imagine how bad the second division is in Portugal when the first division, other than three teams, is pretty poor. You know, his nickname, again, a lot of Portuguese, Brazilian players have nicknames. And I was just fascinated to look up Vizinha's nickname because my mother-in-law, you know, she's a grandmother, and the Portuguese term is vovó for a grandmother, and for a sort of diminutive term is vozinha. It's kind of like little grandmother or like precious grandmother or something.
And, oh, really?
Yes. And
oh, wow.
So I was like, how did he get that name? Why would he choose that? And as it turns out, he was playing youth, you know, soccer as a kid in Cape Verde, and he was being kind of bullied and mocked by players who thought he wasn't very good. And they basically were telling him to go home to your vozinha because he was living with his grandmother at the time. And so he adopted that name, which is kind of an ultimate sort of, you know, brush off that, or just sort of, you know, owning the bully's moniker for him. And so that's a wonderful story. And that team was just a joy to watch all through the tournament. And the second goal in the game against Argentina, I think that ranks up there with like top 15 goals of World Cup history. It was something. And Vizinha made a ton.
It was unbelievable.
He was against Argentina, as I recall, in the opening 5 minutes, he sort of got the ball and as an Argentina player pressing coming after him, and he just kind of did a couple of flicks with his foot very nonchalantly and moved around and kicked the ball upfield. He just was such a cool customer. Nothing rattled the guy at all. One other quick goalkeeper note that just happened recently that I just really enjoyed was the goalkeeper from Norway who, when they beat Brazil, and he Neymar got in his face after he, you know,
yes,
he scored that sort of meaningless penalty kick, and the Norwegian goalie just like whatever, you know. And he'd made plenty of good saves. The interesting thing is that like the best goalkeepers have been just guys you haven't heard of, you know. Courtois is a guy I've heard of. Like he did fine. No one's talking about him. You know?
Right.
So a lot of goalkeepers. I think that there's going to be a lot of goalkeepers with new contracts at the end of the summer, moving clubs to bigger clubs, because there's some gold there, for sure.
I completely agree with you. And Orjan Nyland, or Orjan Nyland, is the Norwegian goalkeeper. And I knew about him, Nick, because the team I follow, Norwich City, which is in the second division in England, the championship, he was a Norwich player for about a year, and he never got on the field, not even for 1 second.
And look at him now.
He was the third string, yes. And when I saw him, I was like, wait a minute. That guy looks kind of familiar to me. I've seen his name, and he has really played well. And the other person in the other team that I'll mention just really quick before we hear a little of the Animal Collective is Gregor Kobel for Switzerland. I am not sure how Switzerland are in the Final Eight, but they are, like, very quietly under the radar completely. There are Switzerland, and he has done a very good job keeping them in the tournament. He was remarkable against Colombia in the round of 16 match that ended up a nil-nil and came through for them many times. So what's your take on Switzerland? I don't know much.
Switzerland is they're a solid team. I mean, they always do well in European qualifying, which is a real slog. Think they topped their group, if I recall. I don't remember them playing a playoff, so they must have either been first or second in their group. They got a lot of quality players playing all over, you know, big time European teams that you just don't really think of. I mean, people think about Granit Xhaka. Obviously, he's probably the most recognizable name, but like, you know, Oscar Bob.
Oscar Bob.
Wait, is he the Norwegian? Am I getting, is he on Norway? I think he's on
Oscar
Norway.
Bob, but anyway, is, He is Norwegian.
He's Norwegian, yes. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's the same with Switzerland. There's a lot of players who Switzerland has brought in a lot of immigrants. You know, Granit Xhaka is Albanian, for example. Mm-hmm. And I just think that no one – they're easy to look past, but they're just incredibly solid all up and down the field. And the tactics and they're very skilled. And, yeah, they're a dark horse for sure. Like I would – I mean, I could see them – going 0-0 ties right to the final.
Yeah,
winning penalty shootouts because, you know, in a shootout, anything can happen. Switzerland's been a bit of a surprise. But I think for European fans, they have been a rising power. And, you know, it's not rare for small European countries to punch above their weight. But Switzerland is, They're there. Like if you're a betting person and you want the long odds, you know, could be a good play, Switzerland. That's all I'm saying.
Might not be. And they're a great example, I think, of a team that has been together for a couple of cycles now in the World Cup. They're not a super young team, but they do have players that have played with each other for many, many matches. So they have that kind of cohesion, almost like a club team that many of the teams and I think Brazil probably would be the best example that just didn't have that team spirit when they needed it. But let's take our hat, tip of the cap to the goalkeepers. And here's a little bit from Animal Collective.
Yeah, the Animal Collective song. I like some of their stuff. It can be hard to listen to sometimes, but you know, hey, it's good. It's a good tune. You know, there should be more songs about goalkeepers.
There should be the underrated heroes. Yes.
I know they deserve one song, and that's it. Just one song. All right, let's move on here. So the next one we got to talk about England, right? It's coming home.
Yes, we do.
Is it coming home? Bud Verge thinks it's coming home.
Yes,
and,
he does.
And I bring up It's Coming Home. It's not actually the song I'm going to talk about, but It's Coming Home was a song that was actually written for the 96 Euros, not for World Cup, but mm-hmm. it has become an anthem and it's become a phrase that you hear certainly British journalists and you know, English people saying it's coming home, meaning that, you know, England is a birthplace of soccer and they haven't won a cup since 1966. So it's finally coming home. Is it finally coming home? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's, you know, it's called Three Lions, Football is Coming Home. It was a Bideal Skinner and the Lightning Seeds put that song out.
Yes.
You know, I haven't heard it played much, although supposedly it is being used at the, I might just have not have noticed this, but it is being used at the final whistle of England Wins. So it's been heard quite a few times this tournament. The one song I actually wanted to talk about was written for England's 1990 campaign, which was an interesting World Cup with very low score. I think no one scored goals in 1990. It was it was an interesting tournament held in Italy. Italy did not win. Argentina won. But New Order was commissioned to put out a song, and they did "World in Motion," which is the it's the New Order's only UK number one, which kind of surprised me. Yeah,
wow.
They had a lot of popular songs. There's a guest rap in it by John Barnes, and it was co-written with comedian Keith Allen. I don't even know who that is, but you know, you'll know it, you'll recognize it. I think most people who are Rockin' the Suburbs fans are of a certain ilk will recognize the song. It's got all the New Order sort of, you know, monikers to it, the synth and the dance beat and all that. But you know, it actually went number one across Europe. You know, the players took I guess players were involved in recording this as well, and they took like a couple thousand bucks out of this, and got, obviously they didn't get royalties, but they all assumed it was going to be, I think, probably like any team that records a song, you know, I think back to the Chicago Bears. It's kind of a joke, and you don't think it's going to go anywhere, but you know, maybe those players should have had their lawyers get the rights on that song, because you know, they only made a couple thousand pounds off of that. But anyway, it's a good football anthem. I think I remember hearing it in the 90s, but it has died out. I don't know that I hear it so much anymore. I mean, you know, we could give it a listen at this point, you know, it's a good song. I think I wanted to include this just really to show that you can have a really good song become a football anthem, at least in my opinion, and be sung and used, but it's actually kind of rare.
Well, some of the crowd are on the pitch.
Also worth wondering to all our Oasis fans who spent a lot of money on t-shirts and whatnot over the last year, that Wonderwall has really become, I think, the anthem of this year's England team. They are playing it at the end of matches, and the whole crowd, again, everyone knows the words, everyone knows the chorus for Wonderwall. So, you know, Declan Rice is crying when they play. Harry Kane is crying. Like, they love it. They really vibe with Wonderwall. I think it's relatively recent that it is, you know, become sort of a soccer anthem. Of course, it's been a song that's been around for a long time. It's very popular. But I would guess if people, you know, in time goes on, as time goes on, maybe Wonderwall will become like the biggest, you know, England anthem. I should also mention one other quick anecdote that I thought was pretty hilarious is when they England played Mexico at the Azteca in that very historic venue with you know 80,000 Mexican fans. At one point, the DJ or whatever they call them in the Azteca PA system before the game, there was a big rain. There's a big rain delay. It was like an hour delayed. Mm-hmm. He played "Don't Look Back in Anger," and the Mexican fans booed it. They drowned it out completely. You could not hear the song. They just trashed it completely. But Wonderwall was you know at the end Wonderwall was able to be heard. And for all accounts, what I've read is that like the Mexican fans were just really gracious. As you know, they don't necessarily have the best rep during the game and before the game, but once you know their team, hey, they played a good game. Both teams left it all out there in the field, and the Mexican fans and the British fans really partied together after that, which is one of
that's nice.
One of the great stories of this World Cup, you know, that will drown out a lot of the noise, I think, as we look back on it. But Wonderwall is it now. I love me World in Motion, but Wonderwall is, I think, that's one's going to stick with England.
I think that the Gallaghers should just put that song in the public domain and let it be everyone's. Do you think there's any chance they might do that?
I think they're arguing about it right now with their Man City jerseys on, what, you know.
We can't tell what they're saying when they're arguing.
You don't know. But, you know, the weird thing is, like, have they been at the World Cup? Because usually whenever they're in the crowd at a Man City game, the camera always finds them. Now, of course, the FIFA cameras always find Gianni Infantino, and I curse at the screen every time that happens. Yes. But I'm thinking if if the Gallagher boys were at the World Cup, we would have seen them. But I have not yet. I don't know if you've noticed them.
No, I have not. And But I would imagine if things get a little closer to the actual final that they pop up.
Well, their song is there. Their song is there. Yes. Whether it's being booed or sung loudly, they are represented. So there you have it.
They certainly are. Yes. Yes.
Ooh. All right. Last one. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say this next one I think is a great example of just kind of a left field song, right, that just has certainly become adopted by some of the most fun fans of any national team.
Yeah, exactly. This next song is a song that has become the fan anthem for the Netherlands. Sorry to see you go. Love the Clockwork Orange. You know, great history in the World Cup. Things didn't really work out this year, but the Dutch fans are just well known worldwide as being an amazing group of people.
Yeah.
They come completely dressed in orange, and doesn't matter what street they're on, could be Atlanta, could be Dallas, Vancouver, I don't know where they were, but thousands of them will go into a street and someone will get a loudspeaker out and they will start playing this song that I'm going to not pronounce well, but it's called Links Rex, which is translates as left, right. It's by a band called Snola Bolokas. I'm sure I didn't say that right either. But it's this. It's a 2015 like party track, basically. It's just kind of a, you know, I don't know what else to say about it. It's not a great song, but the lyrics are about dancing, drinking, and moving together. It's zero football content. And this was big at the last World Cup as well for the Dutch. But like whenever the Dutch are in a tournament, my Instagram feed is full of reels of Dutch fans moving in unison to this song and just shouting it out. And it's quite a visual, it's quite an earworm.
Yes,
but it's a goofy song. But again, that's what. Who knows what's gonna. I don't really have an origin story. No one really seems to know for sure why this got adopted. I guess at first was really picked up in Euro 24, so it's only a couple of years now. But anyway, let's take a listen to this one. And as you're listening to it, just imagine a lot of Dutch fans moving left and right. That's kind of it. That's the shtick. Go!
Deutschland. Schön, dass ich da bin. Ich bin Snowballiges. Klatsch in die Handjes. Oh, das wird super. Und jetzt alle. Wir kommen um zu feiern, das beste Fest der Welt. Wir sind hier gelandet ohne Plan und ohne Geld. Alle eskalieren, Stück für Stück für Stück. Alle springen von links nach rechts und dann wieder zurück. Alle springen von links nach rechts und dann wieder zurück. Alle springen von links nach rechts und dann wieder zurück. Nach links! Oh ja! Nach rechts! Nochmal! Nach links! Nach rechts! Die Hände hoch, jeder Loch hat Bierchen und dann trinken alle Prost. Alle sind begeistert, jeder ist entzückt. Alle springen von links nach rechts und dann wieder zurück. Jawohl, alle springen von links nach rechts und dann wieder zurück.
It is a song with a kind of a certain charm, although I imagine it sounds a lot better right before a match, right with a couple of those boots full of beer that they drink in you.
It also
probably makes the song a lot better.
For sure. I would say it also, having the crowd drown out most of the music helps. Because, you know, because the fans sing along to it and there's a lot of noise and cheering. And it just, because I've seen the video so many times. When I went to actually just listen to the song alone, I was like, oh, it's hard to listen to without like the participation. And I think that's it. This is a song that really doesn't have a life beyond thousands of people singing it and enjoying the hell out of themselves, because it's not something you're gonna, you know, fire up your turntable for, you know, get your record cleaner out, make sure your needle is tight,
no,
drop it on that Snoka Bellas, whatever the heck it is. But it's a great fan chant. It's fabulous.
It is. I love it. And I like you, I'm sorry the Dutch are gone. They're always a lot of fun to watch, and their fans are great. Although the Norway fans have come up with this rowing thing, so
true.
You know, they're kind of chipping in to support that aspect of it as well. They get their drum out at the end, and one of the players
someone needs to write that
bangs
song
on it while everyone rows. Yeah,
it'd be a very simple meter. You know, one, two,
that's it.
One, yeah,
beautiful. So is there anything else you wanted to mention? A couple other little threads hanging around. Obviously, I think it goes without saying that it's very difficult to, you know, encapsulate 48 teams in 1 hour of music conversation. But I love the ones you chose.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple other quick mentions. Another team that went out sooner than anyone thought, of course, the German team, who have won,
yes,
four World Cups and have been very hard to beat, except for this year. But somehow, I'm sure people will know the song Major Tom by Peter,
yes,
Schilling. That has become their anthem, post-match anthem. And, you know, the lyrics have not – it's essentially – it's the same story as Bowie's Major Tom, in slightly different words.
Yep.
And, you know, translated into German, it sounds really cool.
It does.
But, you know, fans were belting out Major Tom, tons of Germans after every song. Again, it's a mystery. Not exactly sure. I guess a fan petition in 2024 pushed it forward as an anthem. So there you have it. It's a good tune. It's got the 4-3-2-1, which is different in German, but
yes,
that works, right? That works as sort of a chorus, you know, that sort of gets you into it. But that was a song that was heard quite a lot in the stadiums. There's also, you know, there's a couple of songs I wanted to mention that were sort of like, well, okay, so what are the alternative soccer songs? And I couldn't come up with much, but I did come up with two good ones. The first one is The Falls Kicker Conspiracy,
yes,
going all the way back to 1983. And Patrick will remember this from his days on the terraces in the mid early 80s. It's actually, I hadn't really looked at the lyrics, but I took a look, and you know, it's about that era, that mid 80s era in English football, where hooliganism was kind of out of control and violence was a problem in English soccer, and the soccer culture was just not great. It wasn't family friendly. Let's just say that. That song is about the police kind of cracking down on that.
The FA broods on her flag can be punished. And then guest is a Euro state magnate cooperates a you elects. Kick off, kid conspiracy, kick off, kid conspiracy, kick off, kid conspiracy, kick off. There's down four walls, up one goal. But that's none of your business. Kick off, kick conspiracy, kick off, kick conspiracy, kick off, kick conspiracy, kick off, kick conspiracy. Football fan at the bus stop, stretched on the balls of his feet at the Christmas rush.
You know, so it's kind of actually, you know, sympathetic with the fans, actually, more so than the authorities. But, of course, it's a fall song, so it's Mark E. Smith. He's a big football fan.
Yes.
I've seen... There's a fantastic video of him. He got in the studio with some soccer commentators at some point, and they let him, like... call, like, you know, the play-by-play for like 5 minutes.
Oh,
and
really?
You gotta look it up. It's he has to be seen to believe.
Oh my god,
it's you can only imagine what that is like. And the pass to the striker, you know. Eat yourself fitter. It's wild. Check that out. So yeah, the fall, Mark E. Smith put his bizarre sensibility to that song. The other one is a Billy Bragg song called God's Footballer, which is kind of a slow, kind of sad song, but it's about an English football player. I forget his name, but he was a young player in the 60s who was up and coming and was certain to be on the English national team, was scoring a lot of goals in the first division, which is what they called it back then, not the Premier League. But he left it all behind to become a Jehovah's Witness. He just said, I am taking it. That's thus the God's Footballer. So it's a really cool song. I would recommend checking that one out, too. It's a lesser known in the Billy Bragg catalog, but it's a good tune. So
that's really an interesting story. Yeah, I love that.
So, yeah, so there you go. There's a quick tour through... World Cup / soccer songs. You know, there's some good ones. There's some weird ones. It's always fun. You know, if people are... I mean, to me, that's just, again, the music, the chanting, the songs, the fan interaction. That's a lot of what I'll remember about this World Cup. I mean, there's been some great games, but, you know, it's kind of a... obviously a difficult, challenging time in the United States. We are not held in high regard. For the policies of our government, but the people have shown through, the American people and all the groups of fans have come over. I mean, there hasn't been any violence. Just been a lot of just fun. People just enjoying and celebrating cultures and exchanging shirts. And that's what the World Cup does. That's why football just, you know, and it may be hard for some American fans who aren't too much into the culture to understand, but it's just so huge throughout the, it's just incredibly, I mean, when you watch, Cape Verde only has 500,000 people. I think all of them were at the airport just see, you know, they've traveled from 10 different islands, you know, to see the team coming off the plane. It's just, it's so much. And then there's, you know, one of the other things that about America is that for all its problems, all of those teams have American immigrants who have that heritage, right? And so they come together with folks coming over, and it is, I think, having a tournament in the United States, 94 was the same way. It's a good place to have a tournament. We had a lot of other problems, trust me.
That's right.
I've taken some, you know, it's been, it really helped my mood often to just see how the fans have come together, and the football's been largely really great, so can't complain. I'll be sad to see it. You know, there's someone tweeted something today or was on Threads or something like the three saddest days are the day when your team is knocked out, the day when there's no games, and then the saddest day, and that's today, that's the second saddest. The saddest day is after the final, when the World Cup is truly gone. So
the Monday after the final is going to be a rough one.
In the words of New Order, it'll be a blue Monday.
for us. It really will be.
Sure. So tie it all up.
Well, wonderfully done, Nick. Thank you so much for the research and all these interesting anecdotes. I really appreciate it, and hope everybody enjoys it. And I will add to your summary that I completely agree. I think it's been wonderful to see people in America who have adopted this country as their home, merging with those people that have come over. And I think all the more credit should go to them, because in many cases they're spending a lot of money, perhaps money that, you know, that would be two vacations worth of money that they have had to spend, because our friends at FIFA have made it so affordable and easy for everyone. You know, they've also sort of tried to divide the game up into four quarters to make it a little more like the NFL.
Well,
hydration breaks inside air-conditioned stadiums.
The U.S. team was definitely a first quarter team.
Yes, they certainly were.
The other three quarters are a little sketchier, but first it came out of the blocks in that first quarter, and that was it. But yeah, I hope. Well, I guess that's one thing we all hope goes away. It doesn't last.
Right. Let's hope that doesn't last. Yes.
You know. But anyway.
Well, maybe we'll go out with God's Footballer. Do you think that's a good choice to close the show?
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Gets keys into the sadness of the, you know, we have a little bit left to go, but we know we'll be saying goodbye soon to the World Cup.
That's right.
I'll have to put my sticker book away. No more stickers.
That's right. Your panini. Go put it away. The final will be played on July 19th, folks. So between now and then, if you have any thoughts about songs that would make good to discussion, let us know. We're at Suburbs Pod on social media, and you can always create a voice file on your phone or your home recording equipment and email it to rock@suburbspod.com, and we'll happily include any of your thoughts. Maybe on July 20th, we'll need a come down episode, so maybe we'll compile any thoughts for then. But with that, Nick, thank you very, very much. And we will talk to everybody out there tomorrow.
God's Football on. Hears the voices of angels above, the choir admonishing you. God's Footballer stands on the doorstep and brings the good news of the kingdom to come. While the crowd sings, Rock of Ages, and the goals bring weekly wages, yet the glory of the sports pages is but the worship of false idols and tempts him not. God's Footballer
terms on a sixpence and brings the great crowd to their feet in praise of him. God's footballer quotes from the Gospels while knocking on doors in the black country back streets. He scores goals on a Saturday and saves souls on a Sunday. For the Lord says, these are the last days, prepare thyself for the judgment yet to come.
It's by a band called Snola Bolokas. I'm sure I didn't say that right either.